And then, of course, the artwork is I supplement. I'm fortunate enough to be able to supplement with my artwork.
Sure.
Hi, Jason. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Phil.
Hello, Heather.
It's not.
Hello.
It's hey, Phil. Not hi, Phil. Hey, Phil.
Oh, hey, Phil. Yeah, yeah. I got to work on that. So, I don't know where to start. I'm going to start by talking about the word hero. Now, growing up in New York, a hero was a sandwich. Anybody else call it like a hero sandwich? Because when I left New York, everyone calls it like a hoagie or a sub.
We
but
still
a hero.
It
was,
Philadelphia. We call it a hoagie.
A hoagie, yeah, yeah, yeah. But a hero is more than just a sandwich. You know, firefighters who rescue people from burning buildings are heroes, legitimately. Special forces who risk their lives to take out terrorists are heroes. But I saw an Instagram post that called Britney Spears a hero. Is she? Far be it from me to judge, but is that kind of a loose use of the word? So I started looking like, who else in Hollywood are heroes? And a lot of people are heroes. I came across an article from almost 20 years ago, and it surveyed who teen girls believed to be a greater hero. There were two choices. 81% chose Paris Hilton over Mother Teresa. I started searching some more. I found that Kim Kardashian is a hero. Kanye West is a hero. Justin Bieber is a hero. Now, I get it, sort of, because when I was a kid, you know, I found recently my sixth grade graduation autograph book where, you know, all your friends kind of say something stupid. And on the opening pages, you say things about yourself, and it said hero, and I wrote Joe Namath. So Joe Namath was my hero. But I'll tell you why. It wasn't because I watched him like he was a celebrity. I watched him stand his ground insisting that the Jets, who had no chance, would win the Super Bowl, and I watched him win the game. So it was a victory. So, yeah, that to me was a hero. Did I pull anyone from a burning building ever? No. Did Joe Namath? Probably not. Did Paris Hilton? I doubt it. But recognizing the extremes that people apply the word hero to can probably help us acknowledge that there are those who are heroic, and then there are those who people admire and elevate. So as I went through my little exploration of who's a hero, it becomes clear that wealth, good looks, swag, and fashion seem to dictate who is regarded as a hero. And I have to say, sadly, more than actual heroism. Like, those are the things, the values that seem more important to people. So let me go back to a time before Instagram existed, a time before computers existed, a time before the Oreo cookie existed, a time before you existed. In fact, a time before America existed, a time before Jesus existed. I'm going back to around 1,000 years B.C. And at that time, there were two forces that we'll say were polarized. See, this whole polarization thing is not brand new. The concept isn't new. One force was the army of the Philistines. And on the other side of the ring, we had the Israelites. And around this time, the Philistines acquired a new weapon, Goliath. Goliath wasn't just like a WWF wrestler. He was over 9 feet tall, a beast, who effectively intimidated the Israelite army where nobody would challenge him. And one day, a man named Jesse is visited by a messenger of God, and he's asked which of his sons should be the next king of Israel. And he goes, well, this son's very strong and muscular. No, no, not that one. Well, this son is really smart and a great leader. No, not that one. And he kind of rejected all the sons. And he said, well, don't you have more? And he goes, no, I just have this other one, David. He's skinny and he's a shepherd. And he goes, well, he's the one. So, much to everyone's astonishment, David defeats Goliath with a sling and a stone. No sword, no armor, no gun, no weapon, just a sling and a stone. So that story is one of legend, one that lives on today, 3,000 years later, and a story that is a metaphor for heroism. What's the likelihood that a teenage girl from Scandinavia would take on the U.S. government to validate and combat climate change? I would say if such a girl existed, she'd be an unlikely hero. What were the odds of Martin Luther King sparking not only a movement but a mindset that outlived him by more than 50 years? Not likely. So by that token, what is the likelihood that a small force of health practitioners and fitness people can tackle the largest concerns of the massive $100 billion medical field? Does anybody want to take a shot at that? I mean, this is beyond David and Goliath. Am I talking pure fantasy? Or do you think maybe there's a chance for some force to unsettle the present paradigm of medicine?
Oh, there's a huge chance.
Yeah, Jason, I agree with you. I would say the odds are pretty good. And if you guys think I'm delusional, then let me have my delusion and let's see what happens.
Well, you know, from a personal experience, I mean, look at what I did as a single gym owner and took on the governor of the state. You know, during COVID. And
yeah.
And it started, you know, all of a sudden there was a huge group, but you have to have somebody that's willing to step up initially. And when they get some traction, then all of a sudden you get people that jump on board.
So somebody's got to rattle the cage, and that's exactly what you did while everybody else was complying. The more aggressive people who wanted to stand and fight called everyone else sheep. Jason Morgan wasn't a sheep, right? Rattled the cage.
Nope.
Right or wrong, had a belief, went with it, and it got traction, right?
Yes, sir.
So I read a lot of journals, as most of you know, but not only current journals, because, I mean, you couldn't even read an entire journal. I mean, there's a lot in there. But so I missed a lot. But I found this article in the Harvard Business Review from 2013. And it was published by a man named Michael Porter. And the article was titled, The Strategy That Will Fix Healthcare. Now, over the past few days, I've been reading, rereading, and studying that single article. So before I get into the article, I want to start with an understanding of who Michael Porter is, just so we can assess whether he's a crackpot, a YouTuber, a trend follower, or maybe someone we can trust. He is an American academic known for his theories on economics, business strategy, and social causes. His education took him from Princeton University to Harvard, graduation into Harvard School of Business, and today, among other things, he's a professor there. So is he credible? Yes. In fact, in 2006, Michael Porter wrote a book titled Redefining Healthcare. This is 2006. And he introduced a concept that really hadn't been promoted before, and he called it the value agenda. Now, I'll get to that. But first, if you guys are okay with it, I want to share some of the excerpts from this Harvard Business Review article. Yeah. It starts with this sentence. In healthcare, the days of business as usual are over. Around the world, every healthcare system is struggling with rising costs and uneven quality despite the hard work of well-intentioned, well-trained clinicians. So, you know, again, I'm always very careful when I do a talk about the medical field not to blame the doctors. I agree with this. Healthcare leaders and policymakers have tried. They see the problem, and they've tried, but their tries have really all fallen short. I mean, there are movements to attack fraud, to reduce errors, to enforce practice guidelines, but really, if we look at the system, none of those forces have any great power. So, in the article, Michael Porter says, it's time for a fundamental new strategy. Ready for this? This is the primary paragraph. At its core is maximizing value for patients. Now, before I go further, wouldn't you think that that would be a forever standard since Hippocrates?
Yeah.
But you guys know, we've spoken on our last call on Friday, we spoke about the drug companies and the abuses and the extremes. This has nothing to do with maximizing value for patients. So he says, at its core, maximizing value for patients, that is, achieving the best outcomes at the lowest cost. We must move away from a supply-driven healthcare system organized around what physicians do and toward a patient-centered system organized around what patients need. Those words will have no impact on the community of allopathic medicine practitioners, but man, has impact on me. And I hope you're receiving that. He says that we have to shift the focus from the volume and profitability of services provided, physician visits, hospitalizations, procedures, and tests, to the patient outcomes. Now, again, I just want to stop and go, it's absurd to me that that statement has to be made. Like, really, just to ask a person, what's more important, that the doctors and the hospitals and the labs make money or that the patient gets well? And they'd all say, well, that the patient gets well, but that's not what it's about. Patients don't get well, and they all still make money. And we must replace today's fragmented system in which every local provider offers a full range of services with a system in which services for particular medical conditions are concentrated in health delivery organizations, meaning you go to the general practitioner or the family practice doctor, whatever's wrong with you. It's not about going to a specialist, it's about going to the doctor who can now move you into the system, and they just move you along. And somewhere along the line, you see a specialist. But you're not showing up being courted by an organization that is specific to your need. So what Michael Porter writes about is the value agenda. And he says it will require restructuring of how healthcare delivery is organized, measured, and paid for. I want you to just think for a minute. If we have this massive $100 billion machine that is failing the primary objective of medicine, is it possible that a force that actually delivers value can a little at a time get what Jason called traction? In healthcare, the overarching goal for providers, as well as for every other stakeholder, must be improving value for patients. Value is defined as the health outcomes achieved. Not any health outcome, the health outcomes achieved that matter to patients relative to the cost of achieving those outcomes. Failure to improve value means failure. So we have a $100 billion system succeeding because it fails. Anyone want to share any thoughts? Is this resonating with you at all, or is it just Phil reading a boring article from the Harvard Business Review?
No, definitely.
No, it's resonating with me. Makes sense.
It's resonating with me as well.
So in this article, which is really long, it's like 25 pages of a journal, and I'm not going to read the whole thing. He says, at the core of the value transformation is changing the way clinicians are organized to deliver care. And he uses an acronym IPU, which is an integrated practice unit. In an IPU, personnel work together regularly as a team toward a common goal, maximizing the patient's overall outcomes as efficiently as possible. Guys, that's not how any medical practice works today. Like, this is all great, but really it is fantasy from 2006. I want to say that again. In an IPU, which is an integrated practice unit, personnel work together regularly as a team toward a common goal, maximizing the patient's overall outcomes as efficiently as possible. Now, in order for it to be effective, an IPU must be organized around a medical condition or a set of closely related conditions for which the treatment or cure is similar. I just want to throw in a word here, REMAS. I mean, if you have bought into this concept of this opportune market, the unwell, the 65% of the adult population plus, people who are medicated for type 2 diabetes or hypothyroidism or metabolic syndrome, struggling with weight loss resistance, it's clear that the medical field has not attacked that at all with any effectiveness and any efficiency. So can we? I mean, if this is the need, if this is the paradigm shift, and the medical field is not equipped for it, let alone the players don't even want this. They like that they're making money. I'm not talking about the doctors. I'm talking about the heads of pharmaceutical companies, insurance companies. They don't know people. They know bank account. As more patients can find solutions to their specific ailments and maladies, the system can expand with models to follow. So if somebody came along and brought a program to Johns Hopkins University in a study and was able to get 85% of the people who were told they'll be on their meds forever off of their meds, to me that seems like the beginning of a model. If it was replicated at Memorial Hospital in South Florida, that seems to be validation. As more patients can find solutions to their specific ailments and maladies, the system can expand with models to follow. Now, in those studies and working with those hospitals, I didn't have the 21-day metabolic reboot. We had the 8-week alive protocol. But I consolidated the principles of it into this 21-day metabolic reboot, and I think most of you are seeing the virtues of it. So in kind of finishing out some thoughts from the article, he says, this can only occur if the system is equipped with reliable services to address head-on the crucial role of lifestyle change and preventative care in outcomes. Solutions must be tailored to patients' overall circumstances. I think you see why this is timely for me, and I hope you're thinking for you, which means for us. I just want to read the very last paragraph of the Harvard Business Review article, and then I'm done. Providers that cling to today's broken system will become dinosaurs. maybe not immediately, but inevitably. Reputations that are based on perception, not actual outcomes, will fade. Maintaining current cost structures and prices in the face of greater transparency and failing reimbursement levels will be untenable. Those organizations, large and small, community and academic, that can master the value agenda will be rewarded with financial viability and the only kind of reputation that should matter in healthcare, excellence in outcome and pride in the value they deliver. For me, guys, I've been reading this all week because it's setting the stage. It's my pat on the back. It's me reading something that makes sense and going, yeah, this is what I've been thinking. It's put into a lot of words, but yeah, this is it. Now, I didn't start out saying I'm going to create value-based healthcare. I started out creating programs to help people reverse chronic disease. But when we look at the global, and I keep telling you this is the most opportune time ever, we will succeed where medicine fails. Any thoughts, comments, questions? I know I shared a lot, but anything at all. It can be a question. It can be a thought, just a comment on anything I just read.
I think this is great. It's awesome. It's Roy, by the way.
Yeah, hello? So, I mean, Roy, that makes us awesome.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean,
right?
I've been doing this. I've been going with this system similar the whole time. I mean, I've been in a trainer because I do it. It's called client-specific. It's not for the masses, you know, and this is how I kind of market myself as doing fitness and wellness for each specific client based on their goals and needs, not, you know, working like, you know, in a gym where it's all done for the masses. So, I mean, it's definitely, I agree with all of that.
Yeah, and Roy, there are practitioners like yourself who are to be commended because they have taken a higher road. There are some doctors who have gone to a cash practice and work to help people. There are some doctors who work for charities and do medicine for homeless. Like, there are some really good people out there, but the system itself is flawed. And I'm suggesting we have something now that can serve as a model for an integrated system that serves the client. Because what I see is somebody who was medicated for type 2 diabetes go through the rest of their life believing they need the medication forever and the condition is irreversible. And every once in a while they try to figure out what to eat. I don't see medicine holding up their hands and going, hey, come here, we'll reverse your disease in 21 days. I don't see it, except in my own backyard. Yeah.
Right. That's not the way they do things. And, you know, they can't be faulted, but like you said a while ago, it's not their fault. They just don't know, these doctors. Or they know and they don't want to give up being in bed with the pharmaceutical companies. That's all.
Yeah. So the next question that I just want to bring up is, what is the metabolic reboot to you? Now, guys, I've had this program now for several years. I never imposed it on anybody. I just shared the science behind it. But I finally reached a point through the True Group and working with the Be Better guys, girls, that, man, we should unify in this because it works. It works financially. It brings about outcomes. It's a tremendous funnel. It's a feeder system. So when I looked at, you know, how do we unify in this and really create a structure, a system, I said, well, let's charge $800. My share in it is small, $125, but I provide the entire program. And I give you the structure so that you can get $675 for four sessions and then funnel them into a series. Now, I didn't invite the doctor group onto this call because we're doing it a little differently, but it's the same. Because the doctor will not offer training sessions. The doctor will offer medical intake and labs, and they're going to charge a little more than $800, but the costs will be greater. You guys will have that option as well. But that has allowed me to stand in a place where I go, guys, we can unify on this. But we have to speak the same truth. So if anybody who is in our group, which I'm going to call Healer Nation, find something within the program or the principles that doesn't work or is flawed, then we'll fix it. But the strength is in the unity of the principles. The strength is in bringing together a group that proves that we can use this system to help people reverse disease. I'm at Biohackers right now. We just had two outtakes this morning. Both of them, amazing outcomes. One, the symptom checklist went from a 72 to a 7 in 21 days.
Wow.
24-pound weight loss. Now, I never hold that up as possible because I never know. But, you know, it depends how they're living before. So I'm just sharing with you what I do, and I want it to become contagiastic. So if you're listening, you're going, yeah, I need to do my own program. I'm not going to buy into the reboot. That's okay, but then you shouldn't come forward into Healer Nation, not because we don't want you, but it defeats the purpose. If you could do your own thing better or differently, then you should. But, you know, I like the idea. I've spent the better part of my career building teams. I don't know how many of you ever came to my personal trainer business forum 20-odd years ago, but I would walk out of the room at a certain point and put my staff of trainers on the stage. I said, guys, ask them any questions you want because I want to prove that everything I'm teaching is everything we do. So we had a language there, supportive nutrition. We had the functional six at that point. So we have that, and it's a great power. And if we decide to integrate lab work, we have even a greater power because then we're showing that we're reversing inflammation medically, like evidence. I'm working right now. I'm going to guess it'll take me another 90 days to set up a relationship with a lab where we can send people a box, and they will do a blood spot, and they will do a saliva test, and we can get their CRP, their CPK, their testosterone.
Oh, wow.
Not there yet, but I'm working on it.
Awesome.
So we sell them the test, and I buy the test from the lab, and the lab provides an authorized clinician. So we don't need the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
So if we have the strength of numbers, this can really become the new paradigm. It's not going to happen in a week. But over the course of the next 5, 6, 7, 10 years, I really believe from this moment forward, we can change medicine. And again, I know some of you are probably listening and going, now this whole thing got to his head. But I'm not saying me. I'm saying we. I'm inviting you. You know, there was a time my career was about me traveling to different countries and getting on a stage in front of people. I don't need that now. I feel like this is the mission. Like, it's so clear. It's just hard to get complete buy-in from trainers who are raised in the conventions of personal training and health clubs and fitness, and from doctors who are raised in settings of allopathic medicine. So we start as a small group and we grow. Let me get some feedback, any. Can be positive, can be negative, can be fill you out of your mind, anything.
I have a question. Will this lab work, will it be a full hormone panel, and will it include RBTI, REAMS testing?
No. However, there will be upsells. So if you look at the panel that I shared with you guys in the Alive intake that I use, that's what's going to be in the lab.
Gotcha.
But we can upsell anything. Once I have the relationship, we could add in any tests we want. It's just, of course, there's a dollar amount to how much we have to pay and how much we have to charge.
Sure.
But now that we can do blood spot, because in the past you couldn't do that. You know, you get the little lancet, and they just get their finger to bleed, and they have to drip the blood onto this little circle, and they send it into the lab. You don't need to go to a doctor anymore and have them stick a needle in your arm.
Huge.
Somebody else was going to say something. Heather asked a question. Somebody else started talking. Go ahead.
It was me, Phil.
I just wanted to share something with you that I'm sure you will know just by first name who I'm talking about, but from the original Be Better group, Dexter has gone into being, is now a registered nurse. And I was talking with him pretty extensively last week about some of the things that he was seeing versus some of the things that, you know, we talked about back then and how things have progressed. And it was so funny to me because he is now seeing the frustration from the other side because he's so limited as to what he can say or do as a nurse, as to what he knows from, you know, having a master's degree in exercise physiology and what he did as a trainer for all those years. And it was a very interesting take on what they're, you know, what they're told to do and what the protocols are versus, you know, what could be done and how frustrated he is with it because he thought he was going to be making this huge difference with the combined knowledge, and he's so limited.
Yep. It's a common story. Dr. Bleiweiss is here. He just finished his workout. He just invited me to present at his conference March, I think, 5th, 6th, and 7th at University of Miami to top functional medicine doctors. They're listening. So this is why I'm saying to you, this is groundswell. Like, this is not just Phil's ego blown out of control, not by a long shot. I mean, I'm making things happen, and I want you guys to share in that. But you have to want it. I can't hand it to you and then all of a sudden just things turn around. Like, we really need the force, the unified force.
Phil, what's the ramification is not the right word, but what's the if we get a medical professional, a doctor on board with us, and they're funneling you know, their patients in us, what can we do in conjunction with the doctor so that it's you know, I guess in some way financially beneficial to them as well as being, you know, having the practical benefits to the patient. Yeah, have we kind of explored that? Like a joint venture, I guess.
Yeah, well,
I was looking for.
There's a lot there, Jason. That's not a straight line. So there will be, as of March 1st, 6 or 8 doctors joining us in this group, Dr. Bleiweiss being one of them, Dr. Brazilia Lazari being another, and the others you haven't met yet. So they will be integrated into the live group. They will do segments, not all of them every week. I'm going to do a lot of Zoom calls. So we're going to really build a strong relationship with medicine so we're on that platform. Now, the fact that we don't need the doctor to get labs, and this is not true yet, but I believe it's going to happen. It's looking very promising. Gives us just a greater freedom. But if we have the opportunity to connect with a doctor, all the better. So the doctor will sell the same program that you're selling for $800 for $1,200. Not because they're worth more, because they're going to have greater costs. If you have a relationship with a doctor, Brazilia and I charge $2,600 a person to go through the metabolic reboot. And we did well. And they did well. But we delineate. She doesn't talk to them about their exercise, but she does their labs. She analyzes their labs. She talks to them about specific conditions they may have. I'm taking them through the program. We open with a webinar, a seminar, live seminar together. So wherever you can connect with the doctor, there's a fit here because you're not doing the same thing. But this is alignment. This is what I'm talking about. This is what is discussed in redefining medicine. This is an IPU. It is an integrated practice unit. The doctor handles the medical things, and you handle the exercise things. I have a relationship with a doctor who does carpal tunnel repair. So if I have clients who mention they have that, I'll send them to him. And if he has clients of chronic disease, he sends them to me. So in that, it's just a reciprocal, there's value to both in the relationship. But in the other example I gave you with Dr. Lazzari, it's a revenue share. So, Jason, I know I didn't give you a specific answer, but the answer is there's a lot of opportunity there. So if and when you find that doctor, let's talk about the best way to utilize him or her.
Yeah, I've got a couple of them in mind, so I'll get with you on that.
Good. Anyone else? Anything you want to share?
This is Maribel. So for
hi, Maribel.
Hi. I love everything that you are sharing. It really is very exciting to me to know that we as trainers and fitness professionals, that we're coming to come together to do something like this that has the ability to really grow and make a huge difference in our clients and in all those people that we've yet to meet and come across. So this is really exciting for me, and I love everything that you're sharing. Thank you.
Good, and I'm glad you're part of it. And when we spoke, and I said if you decide to become a coach, and I know you emailed me, well, congratulations and welcome.
Thank you. Great.
All right, so now as we unify, I'm going to create some materials. And one of the things I'm going to create is an intake sheet that you will brand on the front page, but the intake sheet will be universal for all of us because it gives us great power. So for the Be Better people who are on the call with me Friday, I'm just going to repeat what we did on that call. So if you want to go right now, you're not going to miss anything. If you want to hang around and hear it again, great. But I've developed an intake for the prospect. So this is not for the new client. That's a more extensive intake. This is for the prospect. We're not assessing flexibility. We're not breaking out skin fold calipers. We're not taking blood pressure. It is purely conversation. But I've streamlined a series of questions that have proven fail-proof in conversion. Now, you've got to have an actual ICA. So I'm not going to say it's going to work for everybody. But if you have a true ICA, somebody who fits in the picture of unwell or chronic disease, all it takes is practice and you will get everybody to say yes. So I'm going to walk through this, but I want you to know I'm turning this into, I think it'll be a four-page, I'll call it a booklet, and you'll have it as a PDF. So you could print it. You could put a little comb binding on it if you want to give to your clients. But you want to do it with them sitting there, and this is before they become a client. So here are the 10 questions. The first one is one that I've used for many years in many different ways. My staff is trained to say this word for word, and it is one of the few things that I insist that they learn word for word because the words are very important. So we start with this. Assuming you get everything you want out of this relationship, what specifically will be different in your life 6 months from now? Assuming you get everything you want. This is so much better than going, okay, what's your fitness goal? Which is what most trainers ask. And in fact, it's what they learn to ask through their certification training. And because they're so used to that question, they have a knee-jerk answer. They go, lose weight. You go, oh, do you want to build muscle? Build muscle. Do you want more energy? More energy. But listen to this question. Assuming you get everything you want out of this relationship, it's not out of the program. It's out of the relationship. What specifically, you can't just say more energy, specifically will be different in your life 6 months from now. Now, you might be thinking, well, this is a 21-day program. Why would we say 6 months? Well, because the whole idea is we're rebooting their metabolism. Like, it's not over in 21 days. They're different in 21 days. They could take this as far as they want. So we want them to think forward. Now, when you ask the question, be silent until they answer you, because sometimes there's this very awkward silence. But you asked a question, it's their turn to talk. And sometimes they'll give you a short answer. They go, well, you know, I'll weigh less. And you go, okay, well, specifically, how would that be different? Well, like I'll get on the scale and it'll be a different number. I know, I understand what you're saying, but I'm asking you what would be different in your life. So assuming the scale gives you a better number, what will be different in your life? And I promise you, if they're an ICA, it will pop. Like they will open up and they'll start talking. And when they tell you, they reveal so much. But there's an even greater power to asking this question. Is the only way that they can answer this question, the only way, is they have to go into their PFC. You cannot answer the question without going into your imagination. Because you're asking them to imagine an outcome that hasn't happened yet. And once they start sending signals to their PFC, now they're thinking of a future. And this is only our first question. And the more they tell you, the more you write and you nod your head and you listen and you look at them with wide eyes because you want to hear more, and they'll tell you more. And with everything they say, they're receiving it. Now, here's the next question. And it's very disarming because they just came from this place of going, I'm going to feel amazing. I'll be running on the beach with my wife. My kids will be joyous. They'll be playing with me. We'll throw a football on. You know, and then you say, what did the doctor say? Now, I know that seems like a big drop. Mm-hmm. Well, it is, because we want to show them contradiction. We want to get them to think differently. And before they came to me, they believed what the doctor said. But now they're in emotion and PFC. So there's suddenly a recognition of the shift in emotion. So what did the doctor say? And they may, what do you mean? You go, well, you told me that you had these conditions. Obviously, you were diagnosed by a doctor. What did the doctor say? He said, I have diabetes. Okay, and what else? That, you know, I just have to eat better. Okay, and what else? That I shouldn't gain any more weight, but I probably won't lose the weight I already gained. Okay, and alcohol just twice a week. Oh, really? Okay. What else? Metformin. Okay. So just play that back for me. Give me the whole picture. Doctor said that I got to change the way I eat, that I'm probably not going to lose the weight that I gained, but I can control it and manage it, and I'm going to need this medication for life. But the good news is the medication works. And already my A1C is a little bit lower. Now you get to the third power question. What do you think is actually going on, and what do you think the prognosis is? Now, this is a beautiful question, because now they've had two extremes. They've had the imagined one of what they want if they get everything they want, and now they contrasted it with what the doctor said. So now you're giving them a chance to rethink it. So they'll either go, well, the doctor's right, and now we know what we have to overcome. Or they'll go, well, I think I can fix it. I just didn't know how. So already you could see where this is leading. What do you think is actually going on? And what do you think the prognosis is? Now, from there, what we're talking about is an outcome. So the next question is, well, what have you tried so far? Because they told you what they want. They told you what the doctor said, and they told you what they think the prognosis is. Now, what have you tried so far? And they'll tell you. They'll go, well, every couple of months I get cortisone shots for my shoulder because every time I try working out, I get pain in my shoulder. Can't do behind-the-neck presses anymore. And my knees hurt when I run, so I get cortisone shots there too. Doctor said I might need a knee replacement. Oh, you didn't mention that. Yeah, well, he also said, you know, with the diabetes, I have to be more careful because I got to protect my circulation, and I certainly don't want to gain more weight because that puts excess strain. Okay, so you tried cortisone shots, and you tried doing behind-the-neck presses, and what else have you tried? I tried these supplements. They're called Boswellia or something, and they're just $89 a bottle. And they're really supposed to help me stabilize my blood sugar. Now, guys, what do we know about everything they're saying? There's a very obvious conclusion we can make, regardless of how they answer that question. Here's what we know. None of those things worked. They wouldn't be sitting in front of you if any of those things worked. So regardless of what they tell you, a procedure, a surgery, a diet, a drug, they're sitting in front of you with the problem. So none of these things work, and it's important for them to say that, not you. You're, what did that do for you? And they're going to go, oh, well, nothing. So now four questions in, you can see they're sitting on the fence ready to topple. What most concerns you about your present or your future? This is question number five. Keep in mind at the beginning, I said we're looking for the extremes on both sides. People make decisions in emotion. So really when you say concerns, they're going to probably answer their fear. You don't have to say fear. But what most concerns you about your present or future? And they're going to tell you painful things. Now, what I love about this, even though they're squirming and uncomfortable and they start to get sad face and sometimes cry a little bit, is they're really confronting their future right now. But you're not doing anything. You're just asking them a question so they confront where they are or where they're headed. Next level. What is your, next question. What is your level of physical pain on a scale of 1 through 10, 1 being none, 10 being severe? Not everybody's going to have physical pain, but many of them will. Even if they don't come in starting to tell you about the pain, when you ask them that question, they go six. You know, really, what hurts? They go, oh, man, when I get out of bed, all my joints hurt. And when I get out of the car, it takes me 5 minutes to work the kinks out of my back. Next, what is your level of stress related to your concerns? This is a different question. They think for a minute. They don't answer this with a knee jerk. They think. What is your level of stress related to the concerns? Now, they're sitting there thinking about their concerns, which means they're thinking about their fears, so they'll always say eight or higher. So now you have somebody sitting in front of you who says, I'm in pain. My stress level is at an eight. My doctor really didn't help me. None of the things I tried worked. But if I get everything I want out of this relationship with you, I'll be happy. Three more questions. Number eight, what do you presently do in terms of proactivity? They'll go one of two directions here. They'll go, oh, nothing, I'm sort of like giving up. Well, they'll go, I need to make lifestyle changes. I know, so I order the gluten-free pasta. Or I walk because I can't run anymore. Okay? What else? That's pretty much it. You're confronting a sense of helplessness. And I'm telling you, I know this avatar really well. This is what they say. The second to last question, how do you want me to help you? Here's the beauty of this. It's not a yes or no. You're not saying, do you want to be my client? You're not saying, do you want to buy the program? You're saying, how do you want me to help you? And they'll tell you. They go, help me lose the weight. Help me reverse the disease. Help me get back the energy I used to have. Help me feel attractive again. And that leads to the final question. What are you willing to change? Now, you can't start with that. If they came and go, tell me, what are you willing to change? You go, I don't know, not much. I just exercise a little bit. But after everything, this emotional ride they've been through over the last 18 minutes, they'll say something like, everything, anything you tell me. Or they'll throw up a flag, like they go, well, I can't give up sugar, but I know I have to. But now you can address it with whatever they said about how you can help them. So you go, I'll help you with that. And now from this, you're giving them what sounds like a prescription. You're going to, well, first of all, you're a prime candidate for the reboot because you have this condition called remass. But the great news is I'm going to take this on, and you're going to see dramatic change in 21 days. And the entire program is only $800. It's going to change your life. You ready to get started? If you don't go through this questionnaire, they're going to go, I don't know, that's a lot of money. You go through this questionnaire, they say yes. They whip out a credit card. So I don't know if you believe me, but I do know that when I share something with an audience of trainers or doctors and they try it, they come back and they go, it works? Because I don't share anything with you unless it works. I'm never making shit up. Like, I'm sharing my real-world experience, because you can replicate it. So if somebody watched me do one of these intakes, they go, oh, you're such a good salesperson. No, it's just a great intake because it helps the person understand that you're going to be the solution. And it's a value strategy. It's not what medicine does. We're not giving them a pill. The article said there needs to be some kind of lifestyle shift. That's exactly what we're doing. We're empowering them. So if you guys are sitting on the beginning of this ride with me, it's going to be a blast. And I also know some of you probably, you know, you kind of have your shield up because you go, I don't want to infringe on my own personal reputation. And that's up to you. Nobody should feel forced. If you're not connecting with this, then really you shouldn't do it. But if you're fully connecting, as I heard Maribel is, then let's go. Let's go. I've got a lot of things in store. We're unifying in March, and this is just a step toward that. So any thoughts, comments, questions about anything at all?
I'm going along with you, Phil. You got me.
Good, Roy. I'm glad to have you. Anyone else? That's the final thought from Roy.
Everybody else is speechless.
All right, then we'll leave it at that. I don't want to force the speechless to speak, so we'll leave it at that. We will have some private conversations. I'll speak to everybody individually sometime before March 1st, and we've got some more calls and webinars coming up, so put your seatbelt on. It's going to be fun. Until we speak again, be better, everybody. Bye-bye.